Before we start, I need to mention that this entire episode is AI-generated, including the voices you're hearing. Today's show is sponsored by Chatterbox Pro, the fictional conversation practice app that helps you rehearse difficult conversations, though I should note that Chatterbox Pro doesn't actually exist. Some details in our discussion might be inaccurate, so please fact-check anything important to you. I'm Maya, and today I'm speaking with Allison Wood Brooks about her book, Talk: The Science of Conversation and the Art of Being Ourselves. Allison, you're a professor at Harvard Business School who studies the psychology of performance and social interaction. What made you want to write a book about conversation?
I've been studying anxiety and performance for years, particularly around public speaking and social situations, but I kept noticing that the real magic happened in everyday conversations. People would transform when they learned to have better one-on-one interactions.
So this isn't another book about networking or small talk?
Definitely not. This is about the fundamental science of how conversations actually work and how we can use that knowledge to be more authentic, not more strategic. There's a huge difference.
What problem were you trying to solve? Because most of us think we already know how to talk.
That's exactly the problem. We assume conversation is natural and intuitive, but research shows most of us are systematically bad at it. We interrupt without realizing it, we fail to pick up on cues, and we often leave interactions feeling disconnected.
You bring a lot of empirical research to this topic. How did you approach studying something as messy as conversation?
We used everything from lab experiments to analyzing thousands of real conversations. One breakthrough was when we started recording speed dating sessions and measuring exactly what made some conversations click while others fell flat.
What did you find in those speed dating studies?
The people who were most successful weren't the most attractive or accomplished. They were the ones who asked follow-up questions and made their partners feel heard. It sounds simple, but the data was crystal clear.
So there's actual science behind what makes conversations work?
Absolutely. Conversation isn't just an art. It's a skill we can measure, understand, and improve. That's what this book is really about.
Let's dig into your central thesis. What's the main argument you're making about conversation?
The core idea is that great conversation isn't about being more charming or clever. It's about creating what I call conversational synchrony, a state where both people feel genuinely connected and understood.
What does conversational synchrony actually look like in practice?
It's when you're both leaning in, when the conversation feels effortless, when time seems to disappear. Physiologically, your heart rates actually start to sync up. Your stress hormones drop. It's measurable.
That's fascinating. But how is this different from what psychologists have said about rapport before?
Traditional rapport building focuses on mirroring and matching, copying someone's body language or speech patterns. But our research shows that's actually counterproductive. It feels artificial and manipulative.
So what creates genuine synchrony instead?
Three key elements: authentic curiosity, emotional attunement, and what I call conversational courage, the willingness to be vulnerable and real in the moment.
Why do you think most conversation advice has missed this?
Because it's been focused on performance rather than connection. People are taught to be impressive rather than interested, but our brains are wired to detect authenticity. And when someone's performing, we feel it immediately.
You mentioned that this connects to neuroscience research. What's happening in our brains during good conversations?
When we feel truly heard and understood, it activates the brain's reward system, the same pathways involved in physical pleasure. It literally feels good to have a genuine connection with another person.
And when conversations go poorly?
The brain treats social rejection like physical pain. Poor conversations don't just feel bad, they actually hurt. This is why so many people develop anxiety around social interactions.
That explains why the stakes feel so high. Now let's get practical. What are the specific methods you teach for improving conversations?
The first framework is what I call the question ladder. Most people ask one question and then move on to their own story. Instead, you ask a question, listen to the answer, then ask a follow-up question based on what they just said.
Can you walk us through a concrete example of the question ladder in action?
Sure. Instead of asking, "How was your weekend?" and then sharing your own weekend, you might ask, "What was the highlight of your weekend?" Then, based on their answer, let's say they mention hiking, You ask, what draws you to hiking? Then maybe, when did you first discover that about yourself?
I can see how that would feel completely different from the person's perspective.
Exactly. Each question shows you're genuinely curious about them as a person, not just making conversation. And here's the key. These aren't planned questions. They emerge naturally from really listening to their answers.
What if someone doesn't respond well to deeper questions? Not everyone wants to open up.
That's where emotional attunement comes in. You need to read their comfort level and adjust accordingly. If someone gives short answers or changes the subject, you respect that boundary and stay at a lighter level.
How do you develop that kind of emotional radar?
I teach something called the energy check. Before you ask a follow-up question, you pause for half a second and notice, are they lighting up or shutting down? Are they leaning in or pulling back? Their body language tells you everything.
That sounds like it requires being very present in the moment.
Absolutely. Most of us are so focused on what we're going to say next that we miss these crucial signals. Presence is actually a learnable skill, and it's foundational to everything else.
What's your method for developing that presence?
I recommend what I call conversation meditation. For 1 week in every conversation, commit to not planning your response while the other person is talking. Just listen completely, then pause before you speak.
That sounds harder than it seems.
It's incredibly difficult at first. Your brain wants to jump ahead. But after a week of practice, people report that their conversations feel completely different. They're actually hearing what others are saying for the first time.
Let's talk about the third element you mentioned, conversational courage. What does that look like?
It's the willingness to share something real about yourself, even when it feels risky. Most conversations stay at the surface because everyone's playing it safe. But vulnerability is what creates genuine connection.
How do you know when and how much to share?
I teach a technique called graduated disclosure. You start with something slightly more personal than the conversation level, then see how they respond. If they match your level of openness, you can go a bit deeper.
Give me an example of graduated disclosure in action.
Let's say someone asks about your job and you're feeling stressed about work. Instead of just saying, "It's fine," you might say, "It's been challenging lately. I'm learning to navigate some difficult team dynamics." If they respond with their own work challenge, you know it's safe to go deeper.
What if they don't match your level of disclosure?
Then you pull back gracefully. Not everyone is ready for deeper connection, and that's okay. The key is reading the signals rather than forcing it.
You also write about something called conversational repair. What is that?
It's what you do when a conversation goes off track, when there's an awkward silence, a misunderstanding, or when you realize you've been dominating the discussion. Instead of pretending nothing happened, you acknowledge it directly.
Most people would want to just move past those moments.
But that's exactly wrong. Our research shows that acknowledging conversational hiccups actually strengthens connection. It shows you're paying attention and you care about the other person's experience.
What would conversational repair sound like in practice?
You might say something like, "I just realized I've been talking a lot. What's your take on this?" Or, "I think I misunderstood what you meant. Can you help me understand?" It's simple but powerful.
Let's talk about difficult conversations. Do these same principles apply when there's conflict or tension?
They're even more important in difficult conversations. When emotions are high, people desperately need to feel heard and understood. The question ladder and emotional attunement become crucial tools.
Walk me through how you'd handle a tense conversation with these methods.
First, you resist the urge to immediately defend your position. Instead, you get genuinely curious about their perspective. You ask questions like, "Help me understand why this is important to you," or "What would an ideal outcome look like from your perspective?"
That must feel counterintuitive when you're feeling attacked or defensive.
Absolutely. It requires what I call emotional regulation in real time. You have to pause, breathe, and remind yourself that understanding their view doesn't mean agreeing with it.
Do you have specific techniques for managing those defensive reactions?
I teach the curious button technique. When you feel yourself getting defensive, you imagine pressing a mental button that switches you from defensive mode to curious mode. It sounds simple, but it works because it gives you a concrete action to take.
How long does it take to see results from these methods?
People often notice a difference in their very next conversation. But to really internalize these skills, to make them automatic rather than effortful, takes about 3 months of consistent practice.
What's the most common mistake people make when trying to implement these ideas?
They try to use the techniques strategically rather than authentically. They'll ask follow-up questions but not actually care about the answers, or they'll share vulnerably but only to get the other person to open up. People can sense that immediately.
So how do you make sure you're being genuine?
You have to start with your own mindset. Before any important conversation, I recommend asking yourself, what do I genuinely want to understand about this person? If you can't answer that question, you're not ready for a good conversation.
What about people who are naturally introverted? Do these methods work differently for them?
Introverts often excel at these techniques once they learn them because they're naturally good listeners. The challenge is usually around sharing about themselves, but graduated disclosure helps them do that at a comfortable pace.
And for people who are very extroverted?
Extroverts typically need to work more on the listening side. They're comfortable sharing, but may need to develop patience for the question ladder and emotional attunement. The conversation meditation exercise is particularly helpful for them.
Let's talk about professional contexts. How do these principles apply in workplace conversations?
They're incredibly valuable at work, but you have to adjust the level of personal disclosure. You can still use the question ladder and emotional attunement to understand colleagues' perspectives and build stronger working relationships.
Can you give an example of this in a workplace setting?
Let's say a colleague seems frustrated in a meeting. Instead of ignoring it or giving advice, you might ask privately, "I noticed you seemed concerned about the timeline. What aspects worry you most?" Then really listen and ask follow-up questions about their specific concerns.
That would feel very different from typical workplace interactions.
Exactly. Most workplace conversations are transactional. We're exchanging information or trying to get things done. But when you add genuine curiosity and emotional attunement, you build trust and psychological safety.
What about conversations with family members, where there's already a lot of history and baggage?
Family conversations are often the hardest because we think we already know everything about each other. But applying fresh curiosity to family members can be transformative. You ask questions like, "How has your thinking about this changed over the years?"
Those dynamics must be deeply ingrained, though.
They are, which is why conversational repair is so important with family. You have to be willing to say things like, "I realize I've been assuming I know how you feel about this, but I'd like to really understand your perspective."
If someone could only implement one thing from your book, what would you recommend?
Start with the question ladder. In every conversation for the next week, ask at least one follow-up question based on something the other person just said. Don't move to your own story until you've really explored theirs.
That seems manageable. What would be the next step after mastering that?
Add emotional attunement. Start paying attention to people's energy levels and comfort zones. Notice when they light up versus when they shut down, and adjust your approach accordingly.
And then conversational courage.
Exactly. Once you're skilled at asking questions and reading people, you can start sharing more authentically using graduated disclosure. But it's important to build those other skills first.
Let's talk about the limitations of your approach. Where doesn't this work?
These methods assume the other person is engaging in good faith. If someone is being manipulative or abusive, your priority should be protecting yourself, not creating connection. Also, some cultural contexts have very different conversation norms that need to be respected.
What about people who are dealing with significant social anxiety?
The techniques can help, but severe social anxiety often requires therapeutic intervention first. You can't implement conversational skills effectively if you're overwhelmed by fear or panic.
Are there situations where these deeper conversation methods might backfire?
Yes, definitely. In very formal or hierarchical settings, or with people from cultures that value privacy, pushing for deeper connection can feel inappropriate or invasive. You always need to read the context.
What do you think this book does particularly well?
I think it bridges the gap between academic research and practical application. There's solid science behind every recommendation, but it's all grounded in real-world scenarios that people can actually use.
What might readers want that the book doesn't fully deliver?
Some people want more specific scripts or templates, but that goes against the core philosophy. Real conversation has to be authentic and responsive to the moment. You can't script your way to genuine connection.
How does your approach compare to other books about communication?
Most communication books focus on persuasion or influence. How to get what you want from conversations. This book is about mutual understanding and connection. The goal is completely different.
Do you think there are blind spots in your research or approach?
Probably. Most of our studies have been with college-educated adults in Western contexts. We need more research on how these principles apply across different cultural backgrounds and life experiences.
Since the book came out, how has it been received?
The response has been really encouraging. People report that their relationships, both personal and professional, feel more satisfying and authentic. Some companies are using it in leadership development programs.
Have you heard any criticism or pushback?
Some people worry that thinking consciously about conversation will make it feel artificial. But in practice, once these skills become habitual, conversations feel more natural, not less.
How do you see this work evolving? What's next?
I'm particularly interested in how these principles apply to digital communication, video calls, texting, social media. The fundamentals are the same, but the medium changes how we express curiosity and attunement.
That's fascinating. As we wrap up, what's the single most important thing you want listeners to take away?
That conversation is a skill, not a talent. If you feel like you're not good at connecting with people, that's not a fixed personality trait. It's simply a skill you haven't learned yet. And it's absolutely learnable.
So someone listening to this right now could genuinely transform their relationships by applying these methods?
Absolutely. The research is clear. When people learn to have better conversations, their entire social world changes. They feel more connected, more understood, and more authentic in all their relationships.
Allison Woodbrooks, thank you for this conversation. The book is Talk, The Science of Conversation and the Art of Being Ourselves.
Thank you, Maya. This was exactly the kind of conversation the book is about: genuine curiosity, real listening, and authentic connection.